The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, I Carumba. At Old Trafford, it's Moyes don't cry as Man United beaten again in Magpies' shocker. Elsewhere, Potter's Stoke debate over Chelsea strikers. And at the bottom, egalitarian nature of league confirmed as they celebrate from the Palace to the Cottage. We round up all the Premier League news, including that terrific match on Sunday between Arsenal and Everton. Plus, we bring you thoughts on the Championship, the Champions League, what's on Mario's mind, what awaits in Manaus, posts and more in this Football Weekly. A huge weekend to talk about, so little time to do it in. Here's Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
And Michael Hare.
Hello, James.
Hi, Michael. Lovely to see you.
Oh, I like the tone of voice you've adopted for me, the kind of caring, let's nurture him through this tone of voice.
I don't think I need to nurture you. I need to contain you. You're like a wild beast that at a certain point will unleash on the listeners. Probably quite early on, actually, probably quite early. Do you want to sink your teeth into Arsenal Everton? What a game on Sunday.
It was a terrific game. Now, the one thing I'm always left wondering when watching the post-match punditry and explaining how Ross Barkley was playing between the lines, between Arteta and Mertes, how come Wenger doesn't notice that and tell someone to drop back?
But when they did try and drop back and pick him up, he just whizzed past them. Look, like Ozil and Cazorla, two of the most noted tacklers in the Premier League, were left for dust in the 20-year-old's wake.
He was part Balak, part Gazza, according to Roberto Martinez. I'm always reluctant to overhype players like this. Yeah, it happens with Wilshere, and now it's happening with Barkley. Mm-hmm. Calm it down, Martinez. Calm it down.
But he did look good, didn't he? What I like about him is his personality, the way he's prepared to shout at his teammates. I like that in a player.
Do you shout at the pod members?
I don't have the personality to do that. And also, I'm not a 20-year-old. But if I were a 20-year-old coming into the Football Weekly World and saying, no, Barry, shape up, watch more football. That's what Ross Barkley would be doing.
If you shouted at me, I wouldn't know what to do.
Right. I'm not a shouter. No. But what about this game, eh? Should Arsenal have won it at the death with that cracking shot from Giroud? Everton dominated large periods as well. Perhaps a draw was a fair result, James.
Yeah, I think they deserved a point. I think Martinez named more or less the same. Well, it was the same team as against United. And, they come through this week with their reputation further enhanced. They've still only lost one game this season. I think that's remarkable, really. And I think it continues to make David Moyes look bad, doesn't it?
Wow, that's right. Poor David Moyes.
Yeah, which I think to some extent is a little unfair because he's inherited a good foundation there, but you still get the impression that he's taken that team on, whereas, Moyes, as we'll get to, you could say United are going backwards or they haven't even.
Well, no, Martinez saying afterwards, we removed the mental block of this team. That's a mental block spelled DavidMoyes.
Well, Danny Taylor wrote on, I think it was Thursday or Friday, that it's a matter of fact, basically, that Everton without Moyes are better and United with Moyes are worse. So I don't know, it's kind of harsh to be picking on him all the time, but that pretty much is true. And I think there seems to be a kind of a changing of the guard in the Premier League, and Everton are stepping up and Manchester United are bit of a shambles, really.
Well, they are a bit. I mean, they are for now, but what happens when all the loan players return home at the end of the season is going to be quite an interesting prospect. Are they going to be top four, do you think?
Well, Martin has said that when he first joined Everton, didn't they?
And they should be thinking in those terms.
Well, when Bill Kenwright was at his press conference, he said the first thing that Martin has said to me was, I'll get you into the Champions League, which everyone kind of laughed him out the room for. But it's looking more and more likely because I think, Arsenal aside for the business that they did for Mesut Ozil, that was probably the big signing in the summer. If you look at the transfer window as a whole, in terms of who's improved the most with the players that they brought in, it's probably Everton with Barry, Lukaku, and De La Feo. Again, he came on, was decisive yesterday. They do have options that they didn't have last season. They're able to rotate the players behind the striker more. But they're also, I think Martinez, unlike Moyes, is willing to gamble that little bit more, isn't he? He rolls the dice.
But isn't the crucial thing? I mean, the three names you mentioned there were all loan players. And how do you build for the long term if you can't actually afford to assemble a team that's going to stay together for the long term? If your team is only ever going to stay together for one season at a time, or will getting in the Champions League generate them enough money that they can start buying players for keeps?
That's the question. Well, anyway, they were super, Everton, and Arsenal were super as well. And they are now 5 points clear. They are, though, the only... Am I right in saying they're the only Premier League club in the Champions League that's not yet booked its place in the knockout round?
Yeah, which is unfortunate considering they've got, what is it, 12 points?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a freak, really, because of the standard of that group with Dortmund and Napoli.
Now, tell me, they've got to go to Naples, and as long as they don't lose 3-0 against a Napoli team that has picked up, what, 1 point in its last two home games, losing against Parma, 3-3 against Udinese, they cannot defend, basically, Napoli.
Yeah, and they perhaps won't have Marek Hamšík as well.
Yeah.
Because Napoli basically can't keep a clean sheet at the moment, you'd back Arsenal to go through. And their away form generally has been very good, both at home and in Europe. So,
and, of course, they absolutely beasted Napoli when they faced each other at the Emirates. Napoli's only hope, really, is that there's some kind of spectacular collapse going on from Borussia Dortmund in their game against Marseille. Dortmund have about a billion players out injured. Sahin, Hummels, Bender. Even Bender's out injured. Socrates has got suspended. So major problems for them at the back. And, very excitingly, Marseille have a new manager, and we all know what that means. Not only a new manager, but according to Julien Laurent, a new manager with mafia connections. And if you're going to bring in a man to whip up the atmosphere a bit, I reckon a fellow who's a...
Who is this fellow?
He's called José Anigo, who's the directeur sportif at Marseille. Right. I mean, we joke about it, but his son, earlier this season, was found dead in a gangland slaying. So, yeah, it's a rum business. Anyway, that's the other game in the Champions League. But as I say, Arsenal now 5 clear, just creeping a little bit further ahead because Chelsea, who were in second, went and lost at Stoke. Now, of all the freak results, is this the freakiest?
Well, I certainly didn't see this coming at all. It's quite interesting, you know, that Chelsea have their various players out on loan, taking points off rivals, and they've now been hoisted by their own petard with Asaidi scoring the winner for Stoke.
Why? Now, when Chelsea played West Brom at home, and West Brom looked set for a victory, but then Popov decided to go for goal in the 90th minute, and everybody gave him a right old barracking because he conceded possession, and then Chelsea swept down the other end and earned themselves an ill-deserved point. That's exactly what Asaidi was doing here, though, except it worked brilliantly. What a goal.
It was a great goal, but I think Mark Hughes is the thing here. As you may know, I have feelings about Mark Hughes, though not for Mark Hughes. Mark Hughes will get poor teams' results against big teams. He did it for QPR a couple of times. You know, QPR murdered. No, not against Chelsea. It was Ari against Chelsea and Neil Warnock against Chelsea. Hughes wasn't quite so great against Chelsea. The 6-1 at Stamford Bridge perhaps may stick in your mind. But QPR murdered Arsenal and Spurs at home the season QPR stayed up. And Hughes actually, I think, is very good at preparing teams for specific games. And actually, I was looking at the Stoke message boards yesterday and they were saying, now we see the real Mark Hughes. Mm. I fear that you've seen that game and that next week against whoever is coming up next, it won't be quite the same. But given opponents, Hughes can raise his coaching game and he does get results in some of those games.
It was nice to see him breathing fresh life into Stephen Ireland, the oft-bereaved Maverick... Irish creative talent who looked good in that game, though. But extraordinary result, though, because Chelsea were all over it and then suddenly found themselves on the end of a 3-2 defeat. I guess that's football, isn't it?
Well, you could see this coming in some respects because of the way they defended in midweek against Sunderland. They've already conceded more goals this season than they did in Mourinho's first at Chelsea in, 2003?
What, in the entire season?
In the entire season.
They've conceded more goals already than in the entire season when they won the title.
They have indeed. And their defending from set pieces is just appalling. Yeah, you know, I think Cech was at fault for the first goal, came for it, didn't catch it, and yeah, that was a mess. And, you know, at the other end of the pitch... Yeah, their strikers aren't scoring goals.
Right, but don't ask Jose to criticise his strikers. He's not going to do that. He says, I defend my forwards. They're giving their best, so I can't criticise. Let's have a quick look at him not criticise. He says, "I asked me if I would like my strikers to score 8, 10, 12 goals, and yes, I would. If they had, we would be top of the league. That's the reality." He says, "It's one thing to improve a player of 20, but you ask if I can improve Eden Hazard? Yes, of course. Can you improve a striker who's 30 years old? How?" says Jose. How? Well, of course, it would be a different picture if he'd had a 20-year-old striker. To
if
maybe
only
work
he
with.
Had a striker who's 20 years old and banging them in.
Right.
But he doesn't.
He doesn't. Yeah. If he'd had, a striker who's scored so far twice as many goals in the
as
Premier League.
As the three he
put together.
Currently has, yeah.
Yeah, remarkable.
That would be great.
But it was interesting that he made it about the strikers rather than the thing that everyone's picking up about the problems at the back.
Yeah, because
he likes
defenders,
doesn't he, Josie?
Well, I think it probably was to distract from that's always been Mourinho's strong point, hasn't it? And it's something that coaches are perhaps most responsible for. You know, you can coach us how to defend a set piece, particularly from a corner or whatever. And Chelsea, for whatever reason, aren't doing that. Whether there's not due care and attention being paid to that at the training ground, you imagine there would be particularly after that Sunderland performance, but. You look at that back line, and Azpilicueta is playing at left back. I mean, he's a right back, so he's playing out of position there. I don't know what's happened to Ashley Cole. I mean, he was on the bench for that game. There seems to be an issue there, whether it's fitness or Jose's just doesn't have the same confidence that he used to have in him. We don't know. But I mean, there are certain inconsistencies with Chelsea. You look at Eden Hazard, for example, has one of the performances of the season, perhaps only eclipsed by Suarez on Wednesday night. And Mourinho has talked about him, you know, taking responsibility for his talent in the way that, say, Cristiano Ronaldo did at Manchester United, where he went from being an inconsistent, you know, player to just performing week in, week out. And Hazard has yet to be able to do that for Chelsea. He's been quite mercurial. You know, very big highs and then, you know, sort of plateauing a little bit, you know.
All right. Well, problems continue then for Jose Mourinho. They play Steaua at home in the Champions League, and they're through. And Steaua, I don't think they've won a game so far in this Champions League.
No, they haven't.
There you go.
Just going back to the Lukaku thing that we were alluding to earlier, I've said a few times that I'm mystified by the fact that he was allowed out on loan, but I did hear Pat Nevin, intellectualism and indie music's Pat Nevin, doing an interview on an Irish radio show during the week. And he kind of, I don't know if I completely agreed with him, but he could see the logic behind Mourinho sending Lukaku out on loan, saying that while he is a very good player and he's strong and he gets goals, but his technical game isn't quite good enough to fit into that Chelsea side. But then when you see that Chelsea side playing, it's like, well, I don't know.
Well, Mourinho said, was it last week, he said you should ask him why he went out on loan.
Implying that he'd asked to move.
Yeah.
But presumably he asked because he knew he wasn't going to feature in the Chelsea side.
Especially after Eto'o came in, yeah. Mm. But the interesting is that most of the big clubs this season, their transfer business, whether or not they spent a load of money, has not been good. I mean, Chelsea letting Lukaku go, even though they spent a shed load on players, many of whom haven't bedded in. Liverpool have been widely criticised for buying what were basically a load of reserve players. Arsenal, if they haven't got Ozil in, it would have been a transfer summer of disaster. Spurs spent a fortune, none of them have worked. Man United just got Fellaini, that hasn't worked. I mean, what has gone wrong with all the top clubs this season?
Well, I don't know if you could. I mean, it would have gone wrong for Arsenal if they hadn't got in Ozil, who's been pretty good, and Flamini, who's been an absolute snip at zero.
Andy Carroll signing at West Ham has gone really well.
That's
gone
really well.
And also, it's really helped bring the best out of Stuart Downing, having Carroll there fit
What about City, who did their business early, if you'll excuse the expression?
it's worked for them at home, hasn't it, if not away.
Well, they got a point at Southampton. Is that to be sneezed at? I don't know.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's probably a point gained.
A wonder goal from Osvaldo. I mean, it was a terrific finish from him, but it was a great move from all the Southampton team. Take a bow.
It was, but I think to lob a goalkeeper who is 6'8" is fairly impressive,
right?
But
turned company inside out, didn't he?
Oh, he did. Oof. Yeah, company, incidentally, I thought had a good game that side. He made one sort of clearance from a James Ward-Prowse cross, which went into the corridor of uncertainty, kind of karate kicked it out, which was pretty impressive from the glass man.
Right.
And Osvaldo, it was him, wasn't it, that celebrated his magnificent goal by machine gunning his own supporters?
Yeah, there's a lot of machine gunning going on because De La Feo seems to think that's a pleasant way to celebrate an act of sporting.
Well, I'm not against it, but it just seems a bit weird. If that's your first.
Right.
Well, at least technology's moved on since the days when Robbie Keane used to take a longbow to his own supporters. Right.
Yeah. Surely by now they should be calling in drone strikes. Or
it's harder to mime calling in a drone strike.
Well,
though,
that's a challenge.
Tapping a keyboard.
Yep.
You could have a medieval catapult or something. I don't know.
Right.
A trebuchet.
Is that what that's called?
That's yes.
Very much in Game of Thrones it is. Right. Ooh, Man City have to go to German side Bayern Munich, who had a quiet weekend, putting seven past Werder Bremen away.
Yeah, just the seven.
Just the seven. Boy. And you know what? This was a game they played without Iron Robin, without Schweinsteiger, without Philipp Lahm. I mean, I could go on. They're scary, Bayern Munich.
They are. They're scoring as many goals. What was that, away or at home? I can't remember.
That was away.
Away, yeah.
Doesn't matter to them.
Frightening. You see, City can score that many goals at home, but not away.
So. That's true. Playing Norwich, and well, they're in the equivalent position in the Bundesliga. I suppose that's fair. That's going to be quite a battle, that, for the top spot in the group. Liverpool, meantime, have moved past Chelsea into second place again, although they're on the same point, thanks to their 4-1 victory over West Ham. Loads of own goals in general. How many were there? Three in this game here?
Martin Skrtel got, and I think that's two in two games from him, and then West Ham scored 2-1 goals. Kevin Nolan also got sent off.
He did. That brings us on nicely to the relegation situation, which we'll be addressing after this. Right, West Ham, Nolan out, they play Southampton next, and they've drifted right into the thick of the relegation scrap. They're now on the same points as all those other teams, and it's just goal difference keeping them out of the bottom three. Where bottom three, fire your managers, that's the way forward, isn't it? We saw it with Crystal Palace. They've now picked up two wins on the bounce under forward-looking Toly Pulis.
With Europe's form striker, Marouane Chamakh.
There you go. Two in two from...
Four shots on target this season, three goals.
No way.
Yes.
I've always thought he'd be the... He's a Pulis kind of... striker, because when Arsenal signed him, he'd scored 16 headed goals in the Champions League. He's Pulis writ large.
Oh, I thought you meant he'd look better with a baseball cap on. I was about to agree with you.
True.
In the showers, naked.
What?
Toly Pulis in the showers, naked.
Headbutting
each other.
I was going to say rotting.
Rotting in the showers. Naked with Toly Pulis.
Oh, God.
Anyway, and then the other team now that's changed manager, Rennie Meulensteen coming in at Fulham, and they looked better. Everyone thought they looked better against Spurs, didn't get the result, but they did. They did this weekend against the previously informed Aston Villa 2-0. The Burb. Playing for a move or just playing for his new manager?
Playing for the sake of playing, I think.
Is he?
He just seemed to be on one of those
was
things.
Was he actually
where he thought,
playing? Or is there another verb involved for him?
I don't...
Do you know what
being.
I mean?
He was expressing. Being.
He was being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. It looked pretty special, whatever. What a touch to set up the move that became the penalty.
Yeah, and then what a penalty.
That's also true.
Just rolls it in very nonchalantly.
A great penalty, because some people feel that spot kicks are over too quickly. Certainly wasn't. Yeah, there was time to savour that kick. Go and make a cup of tea and come back and still savour it a bit more.
Still rolling in, yeah.
Still rolling in. Brilliant. What's René Meulensteen, producer Ben's excited by his accent. I don't know if you caught his post-game interview.
It's Mancunian, I think.
Is it Mancunian? Well, he spent...
Well, it's yeah, I'd never heard him speak before.
Is it like a reverse Steve McLaren? And He's spent time in Manchester. He's now speaking the Manchester lingo as Steve was in Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like...
We ridiculed Steve for that, and here's Rennie and everyone's thinking...
Another former United assistant.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Steve was doing after 2 weeks, though, wasn't he? Whereas Rennie Meulensteen had rather longer at Manchester.
12 years.
Yeah.
I still think Jan Molby is my favourite accent. The sort of Danish Scouse hybrid.
It's a quality blend, certainly. Do we know what Rennie's doing differently?
Well, Joel, bafflingly, a couple of times, I think, had Ruiz, Tarab, Dan Berbatov in the same time, which is really not a recipe for hard running through the middle of the park.
So Mulenstein's binned all that.
Well, it was just Berbatov, no sign of Ruiz. I don't think Tarab was even on the bench yesterday. Tarabt, who I have a pure and manly love for Adel Tarabt, but Tarab does look like he's eaten most of the EEC Butter Mountain during the course of this summer.
What was left after Kagawa had a go at it?
Kagawa's got nowhere, and Tarab was fighting him off, I'm telling you.
I mentioned this because Kagawa, of course, didn't feature in a game we'll be mentioning shortly, the Man United-Newcastle game, because, as David Moyes happily announced to the press, he'd eaten too much and had to have his stomach pumped. He's very free with his information, David Moyes, isn't he? Mm. And he announces all this stuff with a grin.
He doesn't like Kagawa, does he?
That's...
Well, I have no inside knowledge. David Moyes has not called me up this morning and said, by the way, Michael, please mention on Football Weekly that I don't like Kagawa. It's just that there do seem to be problems between those two, don't there?
All right.
I wonder what he was eating.
I genuinely don't know.
How do you eat so much that you need to have your stomach pumped?
Well, he's a small guy, isn't
and
he?
You, with Tangfastics, you don't need that many.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about that later on, but relegation, five of the bottom six separated by just 1 point.
I mean, it was a disastrous weekend for Sunderland.
Sunderland.
Even before they got beaten, it was a disastrous weekend for them. And I think last week I offered a colleague a £100 bet that Sunderland would stay up. He didn't take it. And I'm pleased now because I think that was... I think they're gone.
Really?
Yeah.
5 points from safety now, Sunderland. But
they're just...
Their home games, their run of home games coming up is quite...
They have some decent games coming up, like against sort of mid-ish table opposition you could conceivably expect them to beat, but they're just not very good. Poye, he can get a tune out of them for maybe 20 minutes, but that's it.
Well, one of the next two games is West Ham, and frankly, with West Ham at the moment, you do only need 20 minutes.
Well, maybe,
because it's going to be 70 minutes of misery from both teams, and if Sunderland can manage those good 20 minutes...
Make it the last 20 minutes, because if they go ahead, statistics indicate they won't hang on. They've lost 11 points from winning positions this season, the most in the Premier League. And the reason, of course, Barry's own goals. Gus Poyet saying, 5 own goals this season, that's not just bad luck. So what is it? Is there something about...
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's own goals and there's red cards and you just...
I know.
It's a sign of incompetence, basically, isn't it? I mean, the Wes Brown red card a couple of weeks ago was ridiculous, so we'll give him that one, you know, and or shouldn't have given him that one. But, it's very, very frustrating.
Right.
I think it probably smacks of desperation, doesn't it? You know, these last gas challenges, you know, last gas clearances not going in, stuff like that.
Well, still, it's a big shocker, the relegation picture was Norwich's win away at West Brom. West Brom are slipping into that whole quagmire. I think they're only 2 points off the relegation zone themselves. And, well, there you go. Now, all right, let's move on to it then. The big game, Saturday lunchtime at Old Trafford, Man United, Newcastle. And, well, first of all, let's tick the box marked Newcastle praise, because some commentators seem to suggest this was a bit of a smash and grab by the Magpies. What did you think, James?
No, I thought they were worth their win. I think it got to there was a stage where before the goal where you thought that United were just there for the taking. I thought Patrice Evra, for example, had a bit of a nightmare. I mean, Debuchy caught him napping once, and you know he was culpable for the goal as well. Newcastle did well to sort of exploit the weaknesses that United had, but there were so many. I think. Again, not for the first time, United's midfield was inadequate. You know, of Jones and Cleverley, they allowed Kabai to just drift into that space for where he received the ball to score. And it's becoming kind of, I think that was predictable, that result. I know it's the first time since 1972 that Newcastle won at Old Trafford, but you felt it was on the cards because of Rooney's suspension, because you know Van Persie came back when we knew he wasn't fit, and Moyes admitted as much afterwards, saying that you know in an ideal world he would have taken him off after an hour, but he couldn't because they needed to win the game, and he was their only only match winner, really.
Pretty much since the start of the season, Moyes' squad selection, team selection rather, has been informed by kind of desperate necessity. There was an early game against Crystal Palace when you would have thought that they would have rested some players, but they'd had a bad result, I think, in the League Cup, and they needed to get... He's always been trying to catch up with the expectations. He's always been doing things like this, bringing in Robin van Persie when, by all appearances, he absolutely wasn't ready. But Newcastle, that's what, 5 wins now in 6. And they're having, they had the season when they finished top 5 and then bottom 5, and they're back on the top 5.
Yeah, blame the Europa League.
That's right. Blame that Europa League. Extraordinary stuff. What a terrible result for Man United. It wasn't helped probably much by Rio Ferdinand coming out before the game and announcing how he didn't think much of David Moyes' policy of informing the players. Did you read this?
Mm.
I thought it was a pretty bizarre decision from...
I don't know what
media-savvy Rio Ferdinand decided that the build-up to the game was a good time to announce to the press that he felt that it impacted badly on the team and their general level of alertness that David Moyes chose to inform players right before the game who was playing. He said, the old fella, the last manager, used to tell us the day before the game so you could really get built up for it. This time, we don't know who's playing until the day of the game, and so you're just going crazy and you don't get that same level of intensity, which to me doesn't make too much sense at all, but I'm not a pro footballer. But even if it does, you're a Man United player and your manager's massively under fire. You might not want to share how you feel his methods are lacking compared to the predecessor with the media.
It's an echo of England players' complaints about Fabio Capello, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
Or more to the point, you're a senior Man United player, you don't like the manager, maybe you do want to share very deliberately with the media what the shortcomings are.
Right.
Who knows?
who indeed knows? Man United, all sorts of stats about them. They always conceded last season, for example, under Sir Alex... In their first 15 games, they went behind in 10 of them, but they came back to win 7 of those. This time, it ain't happening.
Is it David Moyes' fault? I mean, bear in mind, before Ferguson retired, all the pundits were saying, they haven't bought a central midfielder since before the old Queen died. Mm. It's a massive rebuilding job for Moyes. What's he meant to do? Then during the summer, people were saying, well, Edward Woodward's mind's been off the job, hasn't it? He's been busy negotiating deals with Manchester United's official supplier of third-team chocolate in Antarctica rather than concentrating on the transfer business. Was Moyes hung out to dry, really, not deliberately, by the club? How much should we blame Moyes for this?
That's the question.
Well, there you go.
No.
Well, isn't there a school of thought that, and I don't subscribe to it necessarily, but that he's sort of a patsy and that it's the next manager?
Right. Sir Alex. Oh, all right. Another fella. Right.
No, but that, succeeding Alex Ferguson is a poison chalice, so we'll get some patsy in to do it. He'll fail, and then the next guy.
I can't believe that Man United Marino decided maybe to write off a season with a manager just to burn off all the bad vibes. But it is true that this group of players did have significantly more. I know they were a year younger, but they did seem to react more and go into games with more drive and more hunger than they do under the current man. But saying that David Moyes is not as good a manager with Manchester United as Sir Alex was is hardly a massive criticism.
Well, Fellaini aside, it's more or less the same team that won the title by 11 points last year. Mm. That's one criticism. But I think this United job is becoming the new impossible job. I think it might take the pressure off the England job. We might have some success as United. United descend into mediocrity and the England job becomes easier.
It's kind of heartwarming, obviously not for Manchester United fans, but it's sort of like, welcome to our world.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry, I said that with a bit too much glee, didn't I?
Yeah, but
it's not your world, Michael. They're in the Premier League.
Yeah, I know. I do get fed up of big club fans moaning about how difficult life is when we've only got 329 internationals with a total squad value of 6 billion and we may only qualify for the Champions League in the fourth slot or whatever. But feel a little bit of our pain. Man United, why are we knocking? They're a solid mid-table club. There's nothing wrong with that.
They've got more debt than you have.
Not debt proportional to the actual income coming in, I don't think.
Oh, I see. All right, okay. Well, there's several...
But it is fascinating to see their supporters leaving before the end of games. Yeah. That would never have happened under Lord Ferg because...
Right. They'd have been shot.
That's when...
Trains run on time and everything. Yeah. 7 points off the top 4. I just want to mention that. Are they going to get into the top 4? We always get mocked when we say they're not.
Well, Moyes' teams tend to have very good second halves of the season,
don't they?
Oh,
that's true, yeah. With Everton, he would be down in the relegation zone right now, and then he'd bounce back and finish fifth.
So perhaps it's not beyond the realms of possibility. And they've got quite a favourable run going into the Christmas run of games.
Right.
So they could make up some points in that time. But, yeah, there's not a lot to inspire confidence there at the moment, is there?
Right. Well, they play Shakhtar at home in the Champions League, but they're already qualified for the knockout stages. Bless. Yeah. Anyway, that, I think, is the end of part two. There's so much more to come, though.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's TALES. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Right, about that, so much more to come. We've got posts. Freak football injuries. Joe Marshall, how can you discuss freak football injuries without mentioning poor old Steve Morrow in the 93 League Cup final being dropped by Tony Adams in the celebrations and breaking his arm? Hans Booby, Craig Burley knocked out his own front teeth during a warm-up by jumping and putting his head down at the same time. Oh dear. And all sideways commentary legend Paul Telfer injured his neck and was out for a while playing head tennis in the bath. How do you play head tennis in the bath? Not sure how that happened. MLS Cup. Sporting KC beat Real Salt Lake 7-6 on penalties when Lavelle Palmer missed the 20th attempt to the shootout. There was a shootout in Kansas City. It's like the days of Dillinger. Wasn't he in Kansas City?
Well, he was all over the place.
He was all over.
Got killed in Chicago.
Chicago, right. Outside a movie theatre in the
film,
right. Wasn't it?
It was outside a movie theatre in real life as
and
well.
In real life, right. Cool. We talked about France with Elie Bopp getting the sack at Marseille and new manager José Anigo coming in. Also going was Jean Fernandez at Montpellier, who were champs not so long ago. Who's he been replaced by?
Roland Courbis.
Roland Courbis, who's also got hit by a few slugs and they walks with a limp. He got shot in the past because he's got ties with Corsican baddens.
Yeah. It's the French connection.
Yeah, absolutely, isn't it? Danny Shah, Evian beat PSG 2-0. This was midweek, and we had a few jokes about Evian and that. He said Evian beat PSG 2-0 to end the 36-game unbeaten run in all competitions. Someone should bottle and sell whatever those boys were drinking. Nicely done, Danny Shah. In Italy, quick mention for that, Roma, after those four straight draws, win again. And not a huge surprise to see that Gervinho was man of the match, really, for the Giallorossi, wasn't he, James?
Yeah, set up their goal.
He's back.
Set up both, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, he's back after
Destro's back.
Yeah. But yeah, Rudy Garcia wanted 11 Wolves, and he got them.
He got 11 Wolves, and things looking interesting now for the title race again. 3 points between Roma and Juve. It does look between those two, with Napoli stumbling once more this weekend. Juve fielded their reserves but beat Bologna 2-0. That was on Friday night, wasn't it?
It was.
Because they've got the big, big, big Champions League game away to Galatasaray. Big game, this one, James.
Yeah, huge. They require a draw.
A draw.
But they're going there to win because, obviously, it would be a mistaken mentality to go and just think they could get a result. A draw against a team which has Didier Drogba in it. They drew, obviously, in Turin 2-2. So, and they're without Andrea Pirlo, although they were without him on Friday night, and they did just fine. So, Galatasaray are having a very big problem keeping clean sheets. It was the first one they've kept under Mancini only at the weekend. So I predict goals.
Do you? Well, Galatasaray were somewhat fortunate to take a 2-2 draw at in Turin. Some howlers there from the but I think it was Bonucci, wasn't it?
And they've since ironed out those mistakes. They've won 7 in a row in the league, and they've kept clean sheets in each of those games. So
what about Milan? In that group, Barcelona sailing through. Then you've got Milan, who are 1 point ahead of Ajax. That's a 1 point. They're only ahead because of an extremely generous penalty that was given them in the game at the Amsterdam Arena. They're at the San Siro this time around. Mm. Milan's form coming into this?
It's been okay. The 3-0 win at Celtic, when I think many people expected them to maybe not lose but draw in that match, was seen as the turning point. They played Livorno on Saturday and took the lead, but then went behind. And it was only a great Balotelli free kick that got them back into that game. Max Allegri, the coach, was disappointed with their approach. You know, he was punching the dressing room wall, which the away dressing room at Livorno is just below the press area, so they could hear everything. And they need a draw against Ajax. And you'd kind of back them, because every time we've written Milan off this season, be it in the Champions League playoff against PSV, be it against Celtic, as we said, they've come up trumps. So maybe they will on Wednesday.
All right, Balotelli's looking bit tasty again, isn't he?
He's got his mojo back, because he went two months without scoring, and I think he's had a lot on his mind. He was
sorry. What has he had in his mind? Anything in particular?
He gave an interview with Gazzetta dello Sport in midweek, because I think he used to go out with this girl who claims he's the father of her child, and she is, let's say, a publicity hunting young woman.
Shall we say, God, crikey, that's a bit harsh.
Basically, he feels like his name has been pulled through the mud. He said, you know, right. I want to.
So normally shy, reclusive Mario Balotelli is concerned about the levels of bad publicity that some of his actions might have drawn. Well, you know,
He basically felt the need to come out with this interview and say, right. Look, I'm happy to have a paternity test, yeah, and I'm happy to provide for this child. Stop talking trash about me.
Okay. Well, because previously he seemed to indicate to her that he wasn't in any way happy to provide for the child. That was the public perception anyway. Anyway, so he's playing well. El Shaarawy's back.
Got Meksis and Zapata at the back, though. And right. And Zapata went to sleep for a couple
literally
of goals on Saturday. So that still might happen.
Right, okay. Big game, that one. Anyway, midweek. How about the championship? Michael Hahn. QPR still there at the top, eh?
Still there at the top. Still not looking terribly convincing.
Really?
39 points, level with Burnley. Mm. Burnley, when QPR went there, looked much more convincing than QPR did a few weeks ago. To be honest, this season, the championship, I don't think there is an outstanding team. I mean, it's hard to judge, because when teams come to Loftus Road without what is perceived as our wealth of attacking talent, teams tend to set up on the edge of the box. That said, QPR don't really look like ever breaking them down in any great numbers. The only time QPR scored more than two goals this season was against Bournemouth last week when they got three.
Hmm.
It's, as ever, tense, the championship. I mean, if you look at the table, you'd say Burnley, QPR and Leicester pulled ahead of everyone else. But what's happening below keeps changing. When Derby came to Loftus Road, I thought it was an atrocious team. But Derby are up there now.
Yeah.
A very, very good result for them against that extremely well-disciplined Blackpool team who follow the example set by their manager on Saturday. That's five sendings off in two games. Well done, Blackpool. But QPR, obviously, are the team I know most about, having a season ticket there. But if QPR go up this season, it's going to need to be another huge splurge.
Really?
In the summer. Yeah. The centre-back pairing is Clint Hill and Richard Dunn, with a combined age of 114. And Richard Dunn, I read this stat some the other day, is exactly half as heavy again as Tom Carroll.
Really?
Who's playing in centre midfield. You put them next to each other, it's, dear God, it's like they've just peeled Tom Carroll off one of Richard Dunn's limbs. So they're incredibly slow, the centre-back pairing, which means they can't play high.
Yeah.
They have to sit back, which means that the midfield, in turn, has to sit back, which is why Redknapp's mainly been playing a 4-5-1 this season, I think, to pack centre midfield. When we play a 4-4-2, it's too easy for teams to cut through the middle. This is why QPR have only scored 22 goals in 19 games this season, despite being second in the table.
But
because there are no men coming forward.
Even though they're really slow, they're actually doing a decent job then.
Well, in the championship, Richard Dunn looks like Paolo Maldini, frankly. No. And on the QPR website, there's an amazing clip of Dunn playing a first-time volleyed 50-yard pass to feet. But Clint Hill looks fantastic in the championship, but it's the championship, and this team will get ripped apart. I mean, looking at the teams in the championship this season, I think anyone coming up is going to struggle. It doesn't feel like a very strong championship to me.
How's Joey Barton doing?
He's doing all right, although I take issue with the QPR fans who genuflect before him when it comes to take corners.
Right.
Let's not forget all the marvellous things Joey Barton has done for our club, including telling everyone on Twitter that he'll never play championship football, that QPR are a disgrace, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Let's not forget the sending off at Man City.
Mm.
But, forgive and forget goes a very long way with some people.
Okay.
You seem very angry. as I'm a not, fan I'm, of a team that's
I'm not angry.
Second
I'm,
in the
this
championship.
This is the thing, I feel like the championship version of an Arsenal fan this season. Like one of those Arsenal fans complaining about, oh yeah, we've only got 400 great players and we're only going to finish third or fourth and qualify for the Champions League for the 419th time running. Because it really... It has been the least fun watching a team stay in the automatic promotion places you can possibly imagine. There's been an awful lot of boring football. In fact, on the QPR message boards, this is one of the ongoing things, the debate between the people who say, but we're second in the league, isn't that what matters? And the others saying, you know, I look forward to the football all week. I do actually want to enjoy it when I get there. There's been very little to enjoy. I went to Doncaster away last week, where QPR lost 2-1, and you know, the only highlight of the day was discovering that the all-day brunch in Wetherspoons in Doncaster is £2.46 cheaper than it is at the Wetherspoons in Windsor, and then getting my son's photo with Charlie Austin at the station on the way back.
How about that?
A great packet of pork scratchings in the railway tavern next to Doncaster station.
That sounds like a top day out, Michael.
Yeah, it was the just dream. The 90 minutes in the middle.
Right, well...
I think, are we approaching a kind of a Rubicon where there will, at some point, be a football fan... Mm. Who, even if his team wins everything, he will still be unhappy because, you know, didn't win it enough, didn't win it in enough style.
I think those fans exist. I mean, I'm not unhappy, Barry. I'm just a bit
bored. You seem a bit cranky.
Well, it's just you contrast it with the season that QPR went up 3 years ago under Warnock, when Adel Terabd was ripping teams a new one every week, and it was the most fantastic thing. I kept saying to my son, you know, try and remember this, because this is as good as it is ever going to get. It will never be better than this for the rest of your life. And that's proved to be the thing. But the other thing I noticed on Saturday, and I mean, this happened across the Premier League as well, was the black armbands for Nelson Mandela. Mm. Blackburn, and they weren't alone in this, lots of teams did. The black armbands were not black armbands. They were strips of black gaffer tape wrapped around the sleeve. I've seen Liverpool doing this before. Now, which bereaved family in the world looks at sport and goes, oh... They put some black gaffer tape on their shirts. That makes me feel better. For God's sake, just spend some money on proper armbands, you cheapskates.
Let's finish off with a quick look at Brazil. Oh, the big story Sunday was the really horrific events down in a town called Joinville, which is in... is it somewhere in southern Brazil? I'm not previously familiar with this, but this was the last day of the Brasileirão, the top division there, and a big game going on between Atlético Paranaense and Vasco da Gama, who were struggling its relegation. I don't know how the game finished, and to be honest, I'm not really that bothered. But what happened was, after Vasco went down early, a massive and really brutal fight developed between kind of hundreds of fans. It looked, I could be wrong about this, like the Atlético Paranaense fans attacked the Vasco ones, and they had to bring in the military police, firing off rubber bullets. Helicopter had to land on the pitch to airlift out fans who had been kicked in the head while lying supine. I think three supporters were taken away in a coma. There was talk that one of them subsequently died. Thankfully, that's proved not to be the case. Players in tears, because it's just awful scenes. And of course, a lot of comment because could this happen at the World Cup? Use the verb conflate on Sunday night, James. Good not to conflate the two things. But you know, clearly there are, regardless of the World Cup, there is a massive issue in a country where fan violence is beginning to really get unchecked now. I don't know if you've seen the pictures. They're really, really horrible. Anyway, the World Cup, the draw, Barry, I need hardly tell you, because you live blogged it. What was the best bit?
I didn't, actually.
Didn't you?
I live blogged the build-up to it.
Oh, what was the best part of the build-up?
There was no good.
There
part
was no good part.
Out.
Did yeah, they do any? Just, there was dancing, wasn't there?
Well, apparently, lots of FIFA delegates arrived in a fleet of limousines with a motorcycle police outriders.
Nice,
you know, FIFA understated as ever, and not at all full of their own importance. And the draw was held in a marquee that cost how many million pounds?
I don't know. Was it 10?
Yeah, something like that. Well, whatever, anyway. But yeah, I mean, there's some going to be some great football, isn't there?
Everyone's quite excited about this.
I can't be the only person to have picked up on it, but Blatter was, during his speech, was going on about how it's the first time in 50 years that Brazil have hosted the World Cup, when it's not. It'd be 54 years, wouldn't it? Because they hosted it in 1950, not in 1954.
Right.
But he was just, you know, insistent that it was.
Right.
Another gaffe.
It's 50 years kind of like a... It's like you could talk about a century. It's kind of a block, isn't it?
Chronology for FIFA is like accountancy, as long as you're in the general ballpark.
So, there were a lot of fuss over the draws, and well, there's one group that looks tough in particular more than the others, would you say? It's not England.
For me, the most interesting one is Spain, Chile, Australia, and
Netherlands.
Yeah. Okay. So, a very good team, and Australia are going to go out. You'd imagine.
Okay, bold prediction. Brazil got a relatively easy draw, as did France, which really was a turn-up. Not a lot of people were expecting that. Brazil got Cameroon, Croatia, Mexico. You know all this, listeners. You've seen. You've got the wall chart, just like Michael Hahn. And prediction on England's group, Michael?
Oh, two losses and a draw.
Really?
Yeah.
Who are they going to draw with?
Costa Rica.
Plucky draw with Costa Rica. And the England group? That's exciting, isn't it?
It is exciting. I don't think it's as bad as some people have been making
it. Well,
it's
got England in it.
Well, it's true. I mean, Uruguay, let's not forget, qualified on the playoff, managing a 0-0 draw at home against Jordan. Mm. They do have Luis Suarez, but they are not the best team in the world.
Good
they also
point.
Have handsome good Edinson point. Cavani.
They also have him.
Okay,
Italy?
They have some really good players, but apart from the really good players, they're beatable.
Yeah. What have the Uruguayans ever done for us?
Well, Italy drew 0-0 with England last time they faced each other. So,
it's the most one-sided 0-0, yeah, I think.
But you never know.
And but England, by that point, will have their most successful passing combination from that game back of Joe Hart to Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
I couldn't conceivably see England getting 4 points in that group, and whether or not that's enough to get them out of it, I don't know.
Who will they get the 4 points against?
They will beat Costa Rica and they will draw with Italy.
There you go. So they lose to Uruguay.
Yeah.
All right, okay. What was the reaction in Italy to being drawn with Uruguay and England and Costa Rica?
It could have been worse. It could have been Brazil, could have been Holland and USA in the worst case scenario. And that's not the opponents they face, it's their where and when.
The heat in Manaus.
Yes.
Right.
That's their biggest opponent.
How hot are we talking here? Like, is it like oppressively... Even walk hot.
It's the 99% humidity rather than the actual temperature. That's why England, I think, are going to Florida first to get used to theme parks. No, sorry, heat.
So you basically can't breathe.
Yeah, or you're breathing something that's... You're breathing water, fundamentally, when it's that humid, aren't you?
Mm. But that's not a bad thing, isn't it? Because dehydration's often a problem in these...
Well, water in your lungs isn't a great thing, though.
I see. It's the wrong kind of water.
So the wrong kind of water on the pitch.
If you're a team that isn't necessarily brilliant at keeping the ball, playing against a team who are quite good at that, you're going to be in trouble, aren't you?
I suspect you don't want to be chasing the ball in Manaus, yeah. But then I...
Recife, I have to tell you, I spent various summers in Recife, our summers, winter over there, this time of year, and it can be really, really hot. And I think midday they're playing the game in Recife. But it can also be quite temperate there. Quite temperate. You know, cloudy skies, a tropical downpour.
Yeah.
Lovely beaches there, lovely. Town itself, highest murder rate in Brazil. In fact, the car, we were once held up in a traffic jam on an overpass, and the car in front of us was literally held up by kids with guns. That was quite exciting, really.
Real guns?
Yeah. What they did, they would climb up, because there was a favela underneath they carefully built a road over the top, because you don't want to go in there. So the kids would climb up the framework of the thing, and then assault, as they say, the cars. But thankfully, it was the car in front, not us.
And when this was happening, did you just kind of like...
No, I was sitting in the back seat. I had no idea what was going on. And the Brazilians in the front seat went, ah.
Did you think in the run-up to this World Cup we're going to...
One of the Brazilians in the front seat had previously been kidnapped from his car, stuck in the boot of a car, driven for I don't know how many hours to a town, and then released.
Imagine if they kidnapped you, Jimbo. Think of the outcry, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think in the run-up to this World Cup we're going to get more kidnapping and crime fear stories than we did in the run-up to South Africa?
I don't know.
Well, the Sun last week was warning everyone that they would get
raped
in Brazil.
Yeah,
everyone.
Let's hope it all passes off smoothly then, eh? Just to finish off, Barry, I noticed you've got a big package. Because a special listener, and you know who you are, has sent us in some goodies here.
Yeah.
Why don't you see what's inside it, Barry, huh?
Right. Well, yeah, big square wrapped in nice blue paper.
Hmm. Ooh.
Okay.
Ah.
Right, it's me.
Yes.
In full Ireland kit.
Yes.
I think with number 10.
Yeah.
And I have a tattoo on my right wrist, right, and a captain's armband. So.
There you go.
And in the background, there is an advertising board, which...
Oh, right. That's Jaffa very cakes. Clever. That is very clever.
Popular biscuit slash...
Not a
cake.
Biscuit, but I think we can avoid that debate for now.
That is slightly sinister, actually. Some quality photoshopping gone on there.
Yeah. Think of the possibilities that you could have done with your face. Chose a football match. I think we can all... Thank him for that. Right, and that's it for today's edition of Football Weekly. Many, many thanks to producer Ben, to Michael Hand,
thank superstar, you very much.
To James Horncastle.
Thank you.
And Barry Glendenning, and you, listener. Champions League awaits. We'll be back with a full roundup on it all on Thursday, and a bit of Sid, probably. For now, though, adieu.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.